The Tom Woods Show, episode 2138.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am thrilled to have an opportunity to chat once again with our old friend, Germinal Van, who now has released... Yes, that's right. I'm about to say the number of books that he has. It seems like only yesterday we were talking to him about his book on Thomas Jefferson and his economic policies. And yet here we are talking about a book on a vastly different subject, turned out in record time as usual. 23 books for Mr. Germinal Van. And you won an Indie Book Award recently. Tell me about that.
Yes. So last year I got into the Best Indie Book Award. I submit my book, The Economic Condition of Black America in the 20th Century, and it won the award for socioeconomic history, so I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. You should be. And again, I'm going to ask, maybe I asked this on the air last time, or maybe I had enough common sense to wait till we were off the air before asking this, but would you mind just telling me how old you are?
I'm 32.
Okay, so you're 32. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. I think when I first we first spoke, you were 31, so you've turned 32, and you have 23 books. So everybody, be more ambitious, because Germinal shows to you what is possible in this world. Now, this book, Black Culture and Generational Poverty, raises a lot of important issues, which is why I want to devote two episodes to it. So we'll talk today, and then we'll talk again a couple of days from now, when all this has sunk into everybody's brains. But I want to start off by asking you something that's not in the book. And this is a question that I would want to ask you as somebody who immigrated to the U.S. back in, was it 2010?
Yeah, 2010.
Okay, from the Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
This is a book about Black culture. Now, you are in a unique position because you come from the Ivory Coast and then you moved to the United States, which has a roughly 13% Black population. What did you notice, if anything, about cultural differences between, let's say, what it was like living in the Ivory Coast and then meeting African Americans? Was there anything you noticed?
Well, I would say it's the change of attitudes that Africans have when they move to the United States compared to Black Americans. And I think this change of attitudes is simply based on taking things for granted. As Africans, when we move in the US, we are aware of certain things. We know that first, it's not our country. Like, it's not like we were born here and we already understood the American way of life. Instead, we come here knowing nothing. We just come here with our dreams. So we know that we are not here to play. We're not here to fool around. So one of the things most Africans do when they immigrate to the United States is to subject themselves to the rule of law. Because in America, you're free if you respect the law. And most Africans, they do their best to stay out of trouble because they come here with nothing but their dreams. So it's not like if they get in trouble, you know, dad is going to bail them out. If they get in trouble, they're pretty much done. So it's like a one-time chance that you get once in a lifetime. So we cannot afford to miss that. Compared to Black Americans who were born here. So they were born here, they grew up here. So basically, we think that they have an advantage, and this advantage is to have access to all the resources that as immigrants, we don't have. Because we come here with visas, and the visas that we get are usually limited, like in what we can do as people living in this country. But Black Americans, they don't have visas. They were born here, so they enjoy all the rights of citizenship. And they don't take advantage of that. And this is because we think that they're taking it for granted. While here, we don't take for granted. We try to go on every opportunity that comes our way.
Okay, I wanted to ask you that as I read the book. I was wondering, because there are obviously parts of this book, maybe chapter four the most, where you're trying to maintain the measured tone of a social scientist, but you're obviously frustrated. You know, you're upset. You want things to be different because you don't want people to suffer. You want people to prosper, and you feel like people are adopting ideas that are just poison, that are absolutely going to hold them back. And so you do your best to restrain yourself, but it seems like I can tell beneath that rhetorical veneer that there is a kind of frustration that you're feeling.
Yes, absolutely, because it's insanity. Einstein said, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result. And that's how I see hood culture. It's doing basically everything you're not supposed to do to succeed in life. And my frustration, in fact, is based on the fact that Black people are not the only minority group in the United States. I talk a lot about Asian, so, you know, the Far East Asians and Indian Americans. And these two communities specifically are doing very well economically and socially speaking. So if the three of us, Blacks, Indians, and Asians, are all minorities, why are they behaving so well and we cannot do the same? Because at the end of the day, it comes down to behavior. Each of these groups has had its dose of racism. You know, people have endured racism and oppression. I talk about that in the book. I say that, for instance, the Chinese or the Asian community were banned because of the Chinese Exclusion Act in the late 19th century. And you have FDR interning Japanese Americans into concentration camps. So these are examples of people basically being oppressed. But the Asians did not just let that oppression prevent them from succeeding. Instead, they said, we're going to follow the law. We're going to become a productive culture and a productive social group. And the result speaks for themselves. When you look at the statistics, Asians are making more money than whites. They're making more money than any other racial group in this country. Same for Indian Americans, because they focus on education. They focus on science. They focus on behaving properly. As I said initially, he who follows the law is free, especially in America. If you follow the law, you're a free person. If you decide to misbehave, you're going to pay the consequences of your actions. And in the Black community, we just do the opposite. We always try to defy the law. But the worst is that we try to defy the law when we don't have the resources to actually defy the law. That's the problem. I basically elaborate that we live in a society, especially Blacks, they live in a society where they're not the dominated group. Whites have always been the dominated group. They're the one who basically created the institutions, the legal, political, and economic institutions of this country. And they did that with a certain culture, Western culture. So when you live in a country where the culture is not your own, the best way for you to move forward is to try to subdue yourself into the culture so that you can learn the customs, you can learn the rules and the systems. And I know that every single system has loopholes. If you learn the system, you know the loopholes, and you can even use those loopholes to beat them at their own game. And that's what Booker T. Washington was explaining. And people basically reprimanded him. They said, your Uncle Tom, your coon, you want to let the white man dominate us, and etc. He said, no, we don't have the resources to fight them. So the best way for us to fight them is to become productive, is to create the resources so that we can match with them, not by fighting them without resources. And the Black community didn't understand that. And today, the statistics show, when it comes to income, we are the poorest community in the country because we did everything wrong. Instead of acting in the productive way, instead of behaving properly and trying to fit into the culture in order to create a community of productive citizens, we just do the opposite. We just rather be thugs and get into gangs and do everything that is counterproductive to society.
You realize that nobody's allowed to say what you just said. You can't say that. Because for some reason, if you point these things out, that means you're a bad person. Even though you point them out, precisely because you want people to prosper. And you say, you have the wrong ideas about what prospering means or how you reach that point. Mm-hmm. In fact, it reminds me of a book. It had no racial angle to it, but there's a book by a guy named T. Harv Eker called, I think I may even have had him on the show. It's been so long, I can't remember. But he had a book called The Millionaire Mind. And in that book, he starts off by talking about the kinds of ideas people have, for example, about wealth, that if they persist in those ideas, they're just never, ever going to succeed. These are ideas I was reminded of as I read your book, because a lot of people of all races you can find with these kinds of ideas, that people who have wealth just either lucked out or they did something underhanded to get it, and those people, rather than being emulated ought to be held in suspicion or condemned, or everybody's against me,
right,
or like whatever it is. All these things defeat you before you even get started. Doesn't matter what race you are. Those types of ideas are self-sabotaging.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, yes, they are. And as I said, it's all about behavior. And in chapter 10, I talk about the difference between Blacks and Jews when it comes to wealth and poverty. Most Black people are proud to be poor. While in the Jewish culture, it's intolerable. You cannot be poor because you're a burden to them, you're a burden to society. So when you have a culture like that, when being poor, it's seen as, I don't know, having cancer or something, you will do everything you can to not get it, to not be poor. But it's a stimulator, like it stimulates you, it hurts you, like not that it hurts your ego, but it touches your ego in a positive way. You're like, okay, all my people around me are doing well. I have to do well. But in the black community, I'm not saying it's every single Black person that is like that. Of course not. But when we look at low income Black communities, that's how they behave. They're proud to be poor because they're, oh, well, you know, whatever is the system. Like, you know, the state is going to feed me. Like, we've been oppressed all the time, so there's no need for us to try. Like, people took our wealth away. No, wealth is created. Wealth is something you create. It doesn't fall from the sky. Poverty is the norm. And Thomas Sowell said that every time he goes on the common knowledge, he says that poverty is the norm. Like, the human race began in poverty. Everything we have on earth was created by man. I mean, except nature, of course, but anything that is man-made, it created wealth and prosperity for the human race. But we had to create it. It means that we have to use our brain. We have to use our skills. We have to use our judgment and then exchange what we own with others to create wealth. Poverty is simply the absence of wealth. And so basically, as I always say, like, the poorest person on earth is a child, because a child doesn't produce any wealth, because a child doesn't have a job, doesn't have an income, so it doesn't pay taxes or anything. But adults do. So for an adult to think that there is a system that prevents him or her from prospering, it's nonsense, especially not in today's day and age. Even at the time of slavery, slavery was a system imposed to prevent Black people from prospering. And yet, there were still some Blacks that found a way to become wealthier in a time when there were laws saying that Black people are not allowed to do X, Y, Z. Some Black people find a way to become even richer than the average white man. So it's all a matter of attitude. It's all a matter of behavior. But most Black people refuse to understand that. And they systematically believe that there is a systemic racist system upon them that prevents them from improving their material condition.
I'm curious about whether people in Ivory Coast might say the reason that the Ivory Coast isn't, you know, the wealthiest country in the world has to do with the legacy of colonialism. Do they look back and say the problems we face today are because of, you know, this history that we have, or is that not an issue?
No, it is an issue. That mentality is also transposed in Africa. Many Africans actually believe that Africa is not prospering because of colonialism. But, you know, when you look at colonialism, they're like, you know, you have the direct rule, which was enforced by the French, and the indirect rule, countries that were colonized by the British. So basically, the one that had the indirect rule are generally more prosperous than French-speaking countries in Africa. So this is because, like, French basically exert like a command style of economy, like the Soviet Union. Basically, they decide top down how things should be allocated. But the British, instead, they say, okay, we're going to have like a decentralized system where the locals can, you know, they can decide for the people what is best for them. But at the end of the day, we're still the one making the rules, nonetheless. But we give people leeway. So it's the same like in the US with the federal system. We have a federal system, but we also have state laws. But in Africa, people do believe that colonialism has played a huge role in the retardation of the economic development in Africa. Again, I'm not going to deny that colonialism did play a role, but I don't think that role was significant because it comes back again to individual behavior.
Hey, folks, quick message from Ole Woods here. If you are looking to add Bitcoin to your retirement account and thinking about the long haul, then the best and easiest way to do that is with BitTrust IRA. BitTrust IRA helps you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. It stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. I've often said that if Bitcoin is ever to gain more widespread acceptance, it's going to have to be more user-friendly, and BitTrust IRA could not be easier to use. So go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners, a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods, bittrustira.com/woods. It would be interesting to compare in order to test your theory about cultural attitudes among American Blacks, to compare the experiences of African immigrants to the experiences of American Blacks. So African immigrants were not raised in this culture, not raised with this group of political leaders, completely failed political leaders. But the problem with making those comparisons that you'll run into immediately is people will say that immigrants are a self-selected group. I mean, they're going to be the ones with the most initiative. The ones who are the most ambitious, naturally, are the ones who are going to think to get their act together and do what's necessary to immigrate. So maybe that's not a fair comparison. I do know that there has been some work done on West Indian Blacks coming to the U.S. and that their incomes have been pretty close to the incomes of American whites, which is an interesting statistic.
Yeah, and again, like, it all goes back to behavior. It's how people decide to behave. Because you see, like, the Black American community adopts a deterministic approach to life. They think that whatever happens to them, they're not responsible. It's, you know, the forces of nature that impose its will on them. But we're human beings, and the main power that distinguishes us from animals is our power to think, free will. We know the difference between right and wrong, between good and bad, between good and evil. We know that. So based on the fact that we know these things, we decide how to act. So if we have the free will to decide how to act, therefore we are responsible for the consequences of our actions. So when you understand that you're responsible for the consequences of your actions, you're going to think twice before being a fool. You're going to think twice before breaking the law. You're going to think twice before, you know, like, acting in a way that is having negative externalities on society. And that's what Africans have understood, at least for the ones who come into the United States. Because for the African, too, who stay back home, I must admit that they're not that different from Black Americans here, because they still have that victimhood mentality, like they're doomed. They don't know anything else. And on top of that, in Africa, they don't really teach people the power of the gray matter, basically the power of the brain. Like, in Africa, we tend to believe that what develops a nation is our raw materials. True, our raw materials play a role, but our raw materials have no value unless or until they're transformed for alternative uses. So, for instance, if you take wood in itself has no value, but if you take wood and you transform that to create a table so that we can put food on it and eat, then it becomes valuable. So people don't understand that it's actually investing into human capital that creates human prosperity in any nation. So that is like the main issue in African political culture. We always blame colonialism, saying like, oh, white people are the ones who come, they steal our resources, they transform it, and they sell it back to us at a higher price. But if we invest in our human capital, then whites don't have to steal our resources, because we have the resources there, but we can't even transform them. Yes, we have oil, we have manganese, we have all these raw materials, but we don't have the means to transform them because we didn't invest in human capital. We didn't invest in science. We see science as a white activity, although science has been existing for centuries, for thousands of years. Even one of the first times the scientific method was applied was during the Egyptian Empire. That's why Egypt was the most powerful society on earth for a while. And then when people stopped using the scientific method, when they stopped believing in science, that's when African society started to decline. So it's not random.
I want to go back to the part of your book where you talk about Asian Americans and Indians. And by the way, this category of Asian and Pacific Islanders, which they now have, like if you look at the SAT results or something, they use that category. Mm-hmm. The reason they introduced that category was that Chinese and Japanese Americans were doing so well, it was embarrassing to the civil rights establishment, because according to them, these groups should be doing very badly because they've been subject to racism and they're a minority group, and yet they refuse to do badly. So they would average in Chinese, Japanese, in with less successful Samoans, Hawaiians, and Vietnamese and call them Asians and Pacific Islanders. I mean, it's just everything these people do is to obfuscate, to make sure we never ask the kind of questions we need to ask, we never make the changes we need to make. Now, going back though to that part of your book, talking about those groups, brings to mind Thomas Sowell, who's somebody you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. Because when I look at those groups, I look at Asian Americans and I look at Indians in particular, let's look at the approach they did not take in order to bring about their economic advancement. They really did not go into politics.
Nope.
Right? I mean, I can't think of any prominent Indian American politician. I mean, now somebody's going to write to me and I'll be embarrassed that I missed a big one or something. But you know what I mean? And even if they do, they do that after the group has become prosperous.
Exactly.
And then they do it not as somebody representing the Chinese community, but as somebody trying to at least allegedly promoting the general welfare. So whereas Black Americans, like the Irish, who also lagged very far behind, mm-hmm. were sold this idea that politics was the way to go. And another thing you say in your book is that one of the problems with putting all your eggs into the political basket is politicians have a vested interest in keeping you where you are. And yep. in getting you to believe you wouldn't be anything without me.
Exactly.
And so you even go through like four poisonous ideas that they fill people's heads with that unfortunately they've been all too successful in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like politics has always been an issue and people don't realize that. Because if the politician tells you that in order to avoid poverty, you need to graduate high school, you need to make sure you don't have a criminal record, you need to make sure you don't have a kid before marriage or get married, then have kids and take any job you can to build professional experience. This is stuff that you can do on your own without a politician. So if you do those stuff, you'll be realized, you're like, oh, I actually don't need you. So the politician himself becomes irrelevant. He's like, well, what else can I do then? I don't know anything else but that. So he's out of a job. So in order for him to make money off you, because the politician is a social entrepreneur who only makes his money from the taxpayers' money. So in order for the politician to make profit, he has to keep you poor. He has to tell you that the political body is the body that is going to redistribute the wealth. It's going to give you back what was taken from you. Because those things always attract people. Fairness, justice. You see, social justice, they talk about that. Fairness, justice, equality, all these words. This is all rhetoric. And the funny thing is that most of the politicians, or most like when people use politics, most of the politicians, in fact, are people who are very charismatic, but they're not producers. If you look at the Asian community, the reason why they don't involve themselves in politics is because they believe in producers. To be a leader in that kind of community, you have to have a track record. You have to prove that you've produced stuff that have benefited the community as a whole. But in the Black community, we embrace charismatic leaders who are not producers. They may have good ideas, but it's just rhetoric. So we focus more on how they make us feel rather than what they can actually do. So when you put your faith into someone who has never produced, you cannot expect that person to produce something good because he doesn't have the experience of being a producer. So when you believe in producers, you don't need politics because anyone in the community can be a producer. And that's what the Asian and the Indian communities understood. And that's what they're prosperous today, including the Germans who have always done that. Thomas Sowell talked about this when he said that Eisenhower is pretty much the only German-American president or the only American president of German ancestry. Most were Irish. And as you said, like Irish, they were lagging far behind, same for Italians. And until they finally realized that it's focusing on economic matters, it's focusing on business, that you actually getting prosperous rather than politics. Only the Black community so far is still mesmerized by representation and thinking that having someone of their skin color is going to solve their problems. We have the evidence. We saw that with Barack Obama. He did 8 years in power, and the Black community is still lagging.
Well, Detroit's a great example. Detroit had all kinds of Black politicians.
Exactly.
And that did not solve the problem. Now, in our next conversation that we have, we'll get into more detail about the exact, let's say, cultural values that you think are undermining the Black community. But let me close this one with this kind of question. This is the same question I asked Eric July a couple of weeks ago. Suppose somebody called you up and said, Germinal Van, you are a model of exactly what we want to see in the Black community. I mean, for heaven's sake, you're age 32 and you've written 23 books. I mean, you could be like what we would want to see in five people in the Black community, just in one person. So we would like you to come to the local high school and give the commencement address. And I'd like to know, let's imagine that this is a really poor, dysfunctional community with a lot of crime and where people don't have a lot of capital to start a business. Mm-hmm. What can you realistically say to that audience in the, let's say, 20 minutes they give you?
I will make them understand the power of utility theory, because people don't understand that, in fact, the difference between someone who is poor and someone who is rich is how people use their resources, period. Tom, you and I, we can have the same resources, but we will still produce different outcomes because of the way we're going to manage those resources. How we're going to use those resources is what makes a difference. How you use your resources is only you who knows that. And anyone can do it. It's just that those people need guidance, because anyone can actually start something, no matter how small it is, and build big on this. So if I had the opportunity to go to a high school in a very, low-income area and talk to them, I will make them understand the power of using the resources, how they can maximize on what they have to acquire more down the road. It's all about how to use your resources, and it's all about attitude, behavior, once again. Because in order to improve your material condition, there are certain rules that you got to follow. You got to be frugal. If you want to be rich, you got to save money and use that money for investment. You know, you can't spend your money. You can't spend your way out of poverty. It doesn't work that way. That's why Keynesian economics doesn't work very well. But this is for another topic. But yeah, that's what I would definitely talk to them about. It's about utility theory, how it is important that you as a human being, you have the power to manage your resources as you see fit. But be strategic and be smart about how you manage your resources to improve your material condition.
Well, the book we've been talking about all too briefly is Black Culture and Generational Poverty, a Historical, Economic, and Sociological Analysis by our guest, Germinal G. Van. I'm going to link to it at tomwoods.com/2138. And a couple episodes from now, we're going to get you back on and continue this conversation. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Tom. Always appreciate it.
All right, everybody, tomorrow I am at last going to deliver to you the promised episode on Aristotle on how to lead a good life. And I know that my audience is nerdy enough to eat up an episode like that, and that makes me very, very happy. And let's face it, a lot of people try to impress you by throwing Aristotle's name around. Well, now you'll have a really good background so that you can hold your own in a conversation like that. Well, my view is that Aristotle's view of such and such, it'll be great for you. Anyway, tune in for that. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.